So who sinned? They want to know. Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And if it were my Jesus and I were writing the gospel, I would have had him say, that's a dumb question. Is that the best you can do? Is that all you got? Who sinned? Yeah, these words and this whole dialogue has been running through my head all week. And actually, as I read it, you know, and then sort of carried it with me into the week, I kept thinking that was the Pharisees. Surely it's the Pharisees and the scribes that want to know who sinned, this man or his parents, right? Do you remember who asked the question? The disciples. The disciples. I'm always want to remind you. Yeah, it's the disciples. Now I'm really in a conundrum. Because we are disciples, aren't we? I mean, it's saying in a few minutes we're going to do this responsive prayer at the table. We are disciples of Christ, a movement for wholeness in a fragmented world. That's us. We are disciples. And like disciples, we get it wrong a lot of the times. And I'm still wanting to say to the disciples, is that the best you got? Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Whose fault is it? Let's lay blame somewhere, right? We're good at that. We've mastered that now. Actually, I think we have a whole professional class of politicians and media and just admit about anyone else who wants to comment on it. We love to assign blame. It's just what we do. Whose fault is it? This man or his parents? So I pause for a moment. I think, is there a better question? Are there better questions? We're disciples. I think asking questions of Jesus, our rabbi, in this moment, you come across a man born blind from birth. Can you think of a better question? I've got a few, but I just wondered, what would you ask? What would you want to ask? Why was this man born blind? Thank you. Can we help you? Rabbi, is there something we can do to help him? And maybe it's not even a question. Maybe it's, what did the choir just sing? You are welcome here. Maybe we could just say to the blind man, you are welcome here. I have another question. And again, you're welcome. I didn't make Linda read 41 verses. The lectionary assigns the whole passage. Did you hear it? Yeah. And we read the whole thing out at Women at the Well on Thursday night. I actually did sort of a reader's theater. It was really good to hear it, to hear the whole thing. But I spared you the 35 extra verses. But you read the whole interaction between Jesus and the blind man and the disciples and the Pharisees and the Jews and all the people and his parents. They get dragged into this. There's a huge dialogue. It's a mammoth thing. I might read some of it here in a minute. But in all of it, they refer to this guy as the man born blind. The man born blind. The man born blind. So I'd like to ask, what's your name? Do you have a name? May I call you by your name? Can you imagine being called the man born blind your whole life? Oh, it's all, what's his name? The man born blind. Let's go, oh, welcome, man born blind. Can you imagine if that's how people, and it would be how people know you, right? Imagine if you were known by your traits. Hey, selfish, self-absorbed individual, how are you doing today? Well, thanks for reminding me. Yep, it's me. I'm here. I could go on. I think I'll spare some of those. But yeah, what's your name? Or this may sound like the same question, but I think it's different. Who are you? Who are you? And then, you know, maybe you get a story. And maybe in that story, because what we sing, I think, is true, and what we confess, I think, is true. You are welcome here. Whoever you are, whatever your story is, maybe you have been blind from birth. Maybe you have sinned. Maybe your parents sinned. right? You are welcome here. And I think it's interesting that Jesus doesn't, you know, call them on the bad question, but John, who's writing this gospel, has other things in mind. You know, we could put Paul in here, the Apostle Paul. His answer, you know what his answer would have been? Who sinned, this man or his father or his parents? Paul would have said, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, right? Remember that? Romans 8, 22. Look it up. I'm probably wrong. 8:28, one of those. It's in there. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So Paul would weigh in and say, you know, again, oh, that's his way of saying, that's a stupid question. There are better questions to be asking. But what I'm realizing today as I look at this and I wrestle with all this, we've been asking stupid questions for a long time. There's a motto. Let's put that on a shirt and sell it. Or let's put it on the Disciples of Christ, the Christian church. We've been asking stupid questions for a long time. right? And we seem to have this obsession with sin and morality. We have. Over thousands of years in the past. I think we're getting better, don't you? Because some of you were just right there. It's like, what can we do to help you? What's your name? Who are you? our first question isn't about sin and morality and how bad are you or how good are you. Our questions are more about welcoming and what can we do for you? How can we help you? I wonder if we could make life, you know, hey, Rabbi, this man born blind, is there a way we can make his life better? Well, I'm glad you asked. And then I'd say, is there a better way to do it? Can we do it? Does it have to involve spit? If I were the man born blind, I would want to, I mean, it's Jesus, there's sight coming my way. I'm not going to complain. But do you have to spit in my eye? Again, asking stupid questions. But I think the church has gotten it wrong a lot over the years. And I think a lot of us are in the process of correcting that. I'm glad VM brought me a thing from the Lutheran church where she was this morning about the DMARC. I can't remember the language around it. It's anti-hate language about freedom of religion and freedom from hate in faith communities. Apparently the Muslim Center received a really vicious hate mail, and the DMARC, the Des Moines Area Religious Council, has responded, and a lot of denominations. VM wanted to know why we weren't on there, and I think the answer is because I probably didn't get an email or respond to an email, but a lot of Christian churches are on there. How can we let the community know that we're not on the side of hate when it comes to welcoming our Muslim brothers and sisters, right? And I think we are part of the faith community that would speak with that voice, so maybe I'll correct that. But I think we're working hard. A lot of us, a lot of Christian churches, a lot of denominations, we want to be on the side of love. We want to be asking, what can we do for you? How can we make life better for you? How can we make life better for our Muslim brothers and sisters, for immigrants, for the poor, and the forgotten and the disadvantaged? These are good questions. They're not questions that are immediately asked in public and in policy and in our life together, unfortunately. How does this relate to our picture here? as I mentioned, and I don't think I said enough about it with the kids, but this is actually a Rublev icon from, I forget, is it the 1500s, the 1800s? Do you remember, Tom? Pardon? 1411. Very good. All right. It's part of religious art that would be called an icon. I'm sorry, it's on kind of a scrap piece of paper because I wanted it to be a little more durable. and it's an icon, and icons were used in prayer, right, and worship. And the person who prays with an icon gazes at it, believing that by gazing at the icon and the artwork, you can gaze at God, and God gazes back at you. Okay, so that's kind of the underlying philosophy of it. And this is of the story of the visit to Abraham and Sarah. It's just after this visit that Sarah laughs. She gets her name Sarah because she laughed, because the news that they brought her was that she would conceive and bear a son. Laughable, because she was, I don't know, over 100 years old. LOL. You're going to have a baby. But so Rublev does this icon, and the idea that both the Jews and then the Christians in the early church really played with that story is that that was God visiting Abraham in the form of this community, this family, at the table that we now call the Trinity, the three in one and the one in three. What's really interesting about this icon is a little square down here, a little rectangle down here. I have other copies of this, by the way. Thanks for Tom printing up copies, so I want to hand these out in a minute. Some of you have gotten those on Wednesday night because we do a lot with this on Wednesdays as part of our Lenten study. But there's a rectangle down here. If you see it, a little place at the table. And art historians have looked at this, and scientists have examined it closely. They've scraped little pieces off of this rectangle to see what that is, and they found that it's glue. There's glue there. So they think there used to be something glued on that spot right there. And what Richard Rohr, who wrote The Divine Dance that we're exploring, he and some others surmise that maybe there was a mirror there. Maybe there was a little mirror glued on this icon. Well, that would be a revolutionary idea in iconography, to put a mirror there. Because think about what I just said. What they believe is you're gazing at God. Now you put an icon or a mirror on the icon, and what are you, when you're gazing at God, who are you gazing at? Exactly. Isn't that revolutionary? That's not just revolutionary in religious art or religious practice. That's revolutionary in faith and theology, that we are at the table. Again, there's room for us at this table. That's scandalous enough and radical enough. But there's room at this table, the Trinity. There's room in the community of who God is for you and I to participate. Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. So one of the pieces I've come away with in this study of the Trinity, and again, this is another theologian, Cynthia Bourgeau. She writes about the law of three. And I think this really comes into play here, especially as I think about our world and how we go about solving problems. She describes the law of three as being, you can think of it as three sort of forces in the world. Think about everything that you do, every sermon I preach, you know, I offer an idea. So there's an affirmation is offered. And for every affirmation that's offered, there's a counter, a resistance, resisting force. So there's a positive force, and then there's a resisting force. There's a counter to it. And she believes that the Trinity is the nature, as the nature of reality that we live in this universe. The way the world works is there's a force, and there's an opposing force, and then the law of three, there's a reconciling force. There's a reconciling force. So A meets B, they dance, they argue, they interact, they converse, and out of those, there's a reconciling force that creates a fourth thing, a new thing. It's the fourth thing. So there might be three in the Trinity, but there's actually a fourth. There's always a fourth. That's what comes when the three dance, when the interaction of the three. I think about this, you know, I could give you an example in politics. We saw it this week, right? The Affordable Care Act did not get repealed. I'm thankful for that. I think it wasn't time for that, you know, for 8 years, you know. So here's this thing. Here's the Affordable Care Act, and here's 67 votes to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Thursday would have been, well, they didn't actually vote on it, but it would have been, what, 70 or 69 or so. Anyway, so I feel better about that, but what I'm struck about is how the conversation gets talked about. It's like, we won, they lost, you know, and I can get sucked into that too, and I'm trying not to, because I really don't think That's really all that. And I have a lot of friends on both sides of that argument. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. Yes, that was a stupid thing. Yes, that looks stupid. Yes, you know, but it's all about idea and opposing idea. It's about force and resistance and force and resistance. Where's the dance, right? Where's the third force? And what Cynthia Bourgeau says is we in our world and our culture, we're third force blind. Think about that. We are third force blind. We can't see. All we can see is either this or that. It's either Republican or Democrat. It's either progressive or conservative. It's either right or wrong. We are third force blind. We can't see how the two might dance, how might converse, how they might, okay, yeah, the Affordable Care Act has a lot of problems. Let's fix the problems. Let's tweak it. Let's dance with it, and let's solve a problem. There's a novel idea. Instead of just arguing our positions and our points, and I'm guilty of this too. So we're third force blind. That's how I tie this back to the man born blind, right? Because anytime we talk about blindness in the Bible, we're asking the wrong question if we're really concerned about physical blindness. Who sinned, this man or his father, that he's born blind? Because at the end of this story, at the end of the 42 verses, Jesus said, this is why I came, for judgment into the world, that those who see are blind and those who are blind can see. He's bringing a reconciling force into the world. He's bringing third force vision that we might walk and live in the light with this third way that creates this dynamic possibility for life for all of us. And it's interesting at the end of the story that was read, just the 12 verses that was read today, where did it end? It said, well, let me pull it up. Yeah, the blind man, they were asking him about the whole thing. And they said to him, where is he? And he said, I don't know. Finally, we get a disciple. A disciple. He doesn't know, but he doesn't fake his way about not knowing, which is what most of us do. Well, you know, you just give your best answer. You fake it, right? If he doesn't know, he's going to say he doesn't know. That's beautiful. That's a man who is not third force blind. His sight has been restored. And may it be so for all of us as well. May we have our third force sight restored so that we can stop doing this and start the dance, the divine dance. Thanks be to God.